Welcome to the GW Business of Sports podcast. We talk about careers, leadership, mentors, first jobs, and a lot more here. And we do the show from the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. I'm Mark Hyman, professor of sports management in the GW School of Business. My producer is Liam Swartz. The guest on this episode of the podcast is Matt Taylor, head of communications for the Miami Dolphins of the National Football League. The Dolphins are a franchise on the rise, and we spoke with Matt about the ways that winning changes the equation for an NFL PR professional. Matt has worked in the NFL for the Redskins and Colts as well as the Dolphins, so we also got some free advice about charting a career in pro sports. Matt Taylor, we are so happy to have you here. And actually, we're happy to have you back because you are a graduate of the GW Master's program.
I appreciate it. I always love being back on campus.
Thank you, Matt. I want to talk to you about the difference between winning and losing in your job. How does that affect what you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I've had a little bit of experience on both ends of that one. So, you know, there's a saying that says, you know, winning cures all. And there really is a lot of truth to that. A lot of things that might be said or questions that come up or anything like that. When you're winning, everyone in the building, I feel like, is in a much, much better mood. You know, players are excited. All the media is very excited, you know, because it's a fun time. It's a fun team to cover. There's a lot of exposure. So some stuff that, you know, might cause an issue, you know, it's kind of overlooked. And I say that in terms of that could be everything from, you know, players that are like, it's okay. I don't care if I didn't touch the ball the whole game because we won. And where when you're losing, I think everyone's kind of in a bad mood because, you know, they're so competitive and everything else that then all of a sudden you're the guy that complains, you know, about how much, you know, he's touching the ball and all that. But that's just a very, very minute example. You know, it's funny. You know, people always ask me, like, man, it must be really hard to come to work when you're losing. And it really is, because everyone you work with is just so super competitive. The actual funny part about that, though, is actually a lot more work when you're winning. Because when you're winning, everybody wants, especially in our field in communications, everyone wants a piece of you. So my email inbox looks a lot different a Sunday night, Monday morning after a win than it does after a loss. Because you get every radio producer, you get every television network, you get every writer that all of a sudden wants a couple minutes with somebody. So it's a lot more work when you're winning, but it's a lot of fun. And then if you look at the teams that, you know, they went all the way and had fortune of playing and winning the Super Bowl, you know, look at all the interviews and everything that they had to do and all the work. But, you know, that's what we all achieve and, you know, want to achieve. So yeah, it's a lot more exposure, a lot more people in your building, a lot more attention when you're winning.
So you've worked in major program, college, and in professional football. What's the most dismal season? The season that sticks out in your mind as the most difficult because the team was so bad.
Well, the worst team in terms of record that I worked for was the 2-14 Indianapolis Colts. So that was, I only worked for the Colts for one season, and that was the year that Peyton Manning had injured his neck and didn't play the whole year. Which it was a very unique season. The one thing I will say about it, our head coach at the time, Coach Caldwell, was an incredible leader. You never knew, you know, inside the building. He did a great job of keeping everyone positive, keeping everyone motivated. I think the players played very hard for him. Our locker room was a very veteran locker room, so they were extremely professional. So it made it easier on the staff. But that was by far the worst season that I've been a part of, working for a team. But you know, you didn't really, you feel it because of how great of the people you were working with on a day-to-day basis. And it was also a little unique, too, because we didn't know that Peyton was going to be out for the entire season. I mean, maybe the higher-ups in football leadership did. I was just an assistant PR guy. But it always seemed like there was a chance that he was going to come back at some point. So you're like, okay, then this thing will turn around just because they had so much success there in the years previous. But, yeah, so that year and then, you know, it was a big change, and we, you know, unfortunately did a coaching change and a GM change after the year. Peyton became a free agent, was released and became a free agent, and then we drafted Andrew Luck. So it was a very eventful offseason.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the ways in which professional sports teams are
perhaps competing with media mm-hmm. for stories. You know, maybe 20 or 30 years ago, there was a very clear line between what the team was doing in terms mm-hmm. of promoting itself and the role of the media. And now it's a little bit more complicated. And a moment ago, before we began the podcast, you were telling me about a new podcast that the Dolphins yeah. are doing. And so increasingly, teams are in the business of podcasting and writing, you know, arguably news stories about themselves. So would you talk about that? Do you view what the team is doing in the area of communications as competition with traditional media or in another way?
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I remember my first year as an intern with the Washington Redskins, we thought we were ahead of the game. We hired the first blogger for a professional sports team. So that was a new, you know, entity and all that type of stuff, and the guy was very talented. So I think you know, teams for a lot of years have been trying to figure out a way to, you know, have their own media. I always look at it as it goes hand in hand with the media that cover you. I think anyone that, you know, looks at the Dolphins content, they realize that it's coming from the Miami Dolphins, you know, which might be a little different than coming from the Miami Herald. But I think our, you know, ability to tell the stories of our players, our coaches and our executives and the access that we can give and all that is more of a, it's just something extra for our fans. You know, nowadays, you know, there might not be as much time on a more traditional network or something like that to tell a longer form story that, you know, they might have been able to do 10 years ago. So I think it's just more of an addition to it. I think fans are going to read a little bit of everything. But I wouldn't say we necessarily compete with traditional media. You know, when you get into news breaking, I really don't think we compete much at all. Yeah, there's an opportunity for decisions that are made. Sometimes that you have a little bit of a heads up that you could break it yourself. But the majority of the time, the way news breaks, at least in the NFL, it usually breaks before a team is able to officially put anything out. And I'll give you an example. So if we sign a player, as a team, we cannot put out a press release. We cannot tweet it. We cannot officially say that we've signed that player until he has signed his contract and it's been filed with the NFL. Most of the time, that news is broken to some outside media entity well before the player has physically signed the contract. That's just kind of the way the news flow works. So we're never going to be the ones that break that type of information. I shouldn't say never, but just not very often. So I think a lot more of our content is more about just kind of telling the stories about the different personalities that work for the Miami Dolphins.
Well, let's pursue that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's take the example of a coach. You're
yes.
hiring a new coach,
yes.
and the Dolphins have done this a few times
yes.
since you've been
mm-hmm.
there. What would be the reasons not to break that news on Dolphins, quote-unquote, media?
Yeah. One, it might be out of your control. So I've had situations where we've had the best of intentions in terms of we were going to roll out a hiring. Can't remember if it's head coach or not. I'm sure that, you know, obviously you would love to do that. And the benefits of doing it are you get it out first, but more importantly, you get it out with your message, with your, you know, a lot of times you hire a head coach, like we're also going to push out at the same time a lot of content of what well-respected voices around the league are saying about that coach and why that coach is going to be successful as a head coach. So like to be able to put that all out at once, so the first time someone's consuming that news, they're getting all that context and all that good content, you know, that's obviously ideal. You would love to do that in a perfect world, but you know, between agents talking to media, other people having connections with prominent media members. I mean, let's face it, there are a lot of great newsbreakers that I work with hand in hand, and they have great connections, and they're very, very good at what they do, and they're tireless. So, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's out of your control.
If it were in your control, Matt,
yeah.
are there reasons, strategic reasons,
mm-hmm.
why breaking news like that, if you could,
yes,
would not be a good idea for the team?
Yeah, I think from a PR standpoint, you know, sometimes if maybe a prominent voice is the one that breaks the story, and then tells everyone why it's a great hire, I think there's a strategic reason why you'd want to do that. Because, you know, some people might look at, well, the team says this is a great idea, but obviously they're the team. But hey, this prominent person who I read, and they're the one who is the end-all be-all, in my opinion, of everything Miami Dolphins, everything National Football League, they're telling me that this is an incredible hire, I believe them. So I think, you know, sometimes strategically you could work on something like that as well.
I want to ask you a little bit about international.
Okay.
So all
we have some experience there too.
Well, you do. And all professional sports leagues, of course, you know, are looking globally at growing their audience. I wonder, you know, are the Dolphins, you know, positioned in Miami? Certainly, you've got an audience outside the United States. How are you reaching out to those fans?
Yeah. So we obviously, the Miami is a very international community, so there's a lot of effort going there. The other thing that we're very fortunate is we've played in London twice since I've been with the Dolphins, which is five seasons. And we have another international game, this upcoming season, location to be determined, to be released later, I'm sure, before the schedule comes out and later in April. But
be fun to talk about it here, Matt.
That one's above my pay grade. Okay. But it's really cool when you go over to London. So I can speak from that because that's my experience. One, there are a ton of Dolphins fans that are over there, and they, you know, a lot of it goes back to the days of Dan Marino, because internationally it used to be they had one game on international airwaves a week. Well, Dolphins were a very dominant team in the 80s, so there's so many people that grew up Dolphins fans and Dan Marino fans because of that was the team that they were exposed to as a child and living overseas. So we go to London and we really take it over. We do a lot of events. Our marketing department does a great job of doing a Dolphins fan meetup, which is, you know, a really cool experience. And they also do the NFL does a big rally and all that type of stuff in downtown London. So in terms of growing the brand, it's incredible exposure. I really enjoy that trip.
Are you using social media to target fans internationally? Tell us about one or two things that you think.
We absolutely are. We have a great digital team that I would be fabricating if I told you I understood everything that they were doing, because they're so top level on it. But yeah, they 100% are. I've sat in those meetings before when they've talked about these different groups and how they do it. And it's very fascinating to do. But to give you the nuts and bolts of it, that would be that would not be my expertise.
Got it. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we want some free career advice, as we always do on this podcast.
Yeah.
Is your career path is very interesting. You've worked at a lot of amazing places. Is it the product of a plan, or is do you view it more as kind of responding to opportunities as they came along?
So it's a little bit of both, although the latter was probably a little bit more important for me. Not to bore you too much, but I'll give you a little background to kind of how I got started. So my whole life, or most of my whole life, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. I thought that was the greatest job. Obviously, you can tell I have no problem keeping my mouth shut and all that type of stuff, and I just always wanted to do that. So I went to Virginia Tech and really attacked it in terms of having a plan. I interned here locally at WRC, WJLA, down in Roanoke, which is the closest market to Virginia Tech, WSLS, excuse me, also the ESPN radio station in Blacksburg, and did some student media stuff as well. So I was literally doing anything and everything that I could to find a career in sports broadcasting, asking a lot of questions, networking like crazy. My senior year in the springtime, I was sending out my resume tape, which, by the way, one still does exist. It's on a VHS, which I've not let my wife see yet. But anyways, is terrible. There's a reason why I'm in PR. But anyways, so I'm sending out my resume tape, and you know, I obviously was not getting a lot of hits, and I started kind of looking at a little bit of some of the trends of the way some media markets were going. So for local DC people, actually internationally, this was a little bit after the George Michael Sports Machine was broke up, and that one really hit home for me because, you know, I grew up watching that. I also interned there, but I saw how big of a giant and juggernaut that was in the media industry, and for that to no longer be in existence, I was like, okay, things are changing a lot here. So I started thinking, and I saw the program at GW, which was the MBA program, and I kind of thought, well, that gives me some more options if I don't find a career in sports. And I applied. There was only one GMAT that you could still take. I was that late in the game. But anyways, I got into GW, and Lisa actually recommended that I do an internship.
Lisa Nerotti.
Yes, yes, okay. Lisa. Yep. She recommended, very good advice, that I intern in a PR department because it would be the closest thing to the media work that I had done in college as an undergrad and in my internships, because I was not a PR major in undergrad. And so I did, and I became an intern or got an internship with the Washington Redskins in the PR department. And even when I went, I was like, well, you know, this will be my foot in the door, because look at how many people, great executives and everything else, started in PR and then launched it into whether it be a scout or a general manager or anything else, cap person, commissioner, you know, Pete Rozelle, obviously the most famous PR person in the league. So that's kind of was my mindset. And then I got in and I had some really great mentors there and just absolutely fell in love with PR and realized, okay, this is what I want to do. I think I'm okay at it. And I just really enjoy it. So next, I was able, very fortunate after graduation here at George Washington, to get hired full-time from the Redskins. After my third season there, my boss at the time, he called me one day. I'll never forget. I was at an alumni golf tournament. It was at the, it was during the players, about during the lockout. So there wasn't a lot of movement between teams at the time. And he just said, hey, you're going to Indianapolis. I was like, okay, what are you talking about? And essentially someone had reached out to him on advice of putting a staff together because they were interviewing for a job. And he had recommended that if that person got the job, they should look into me as, you know, on that staff, because they could give me a bump in responsibility, which it all wound up coming together. So I was at the Indianapolis Colts for a year. I thought I was going to be there for a very long time. Loved it. Great organization. Great opportunity. And then another random thought, and a former boss was going to take the head of athletic communications at the University of Maryland. And he called me and said, look, I'd like for you to run our football communications department at Maryland. And I know, you know, it might not be the NFL, which, because I had never really had any desire to work outside the NFL. And he said, but I think it'd be really good experience for you for a couple reasons. You get to work every single day with a head coach, so you would get that experience. And you would also get to, you know, have a little bit of management experience in terms of, you know, an assistant and the college interns that obviously would work on the program. And I think that will help you develop and get to where you want to be. And I kind of thought about it, and I had more trust in him than anybody, and I went with it, and he was 100% right. And then after three seasons, I was able to interview for a job with the Miami Dolphins, overseeing the football communications. And I had, you know, one of the things that I could sell in the interview is, because you're interviewing a bunch of people that were assistants for other teams, was saying, like, look, I've worked with a head coach every day, and I've managed a small staff, so I've done this before, although different from college to pro and whatnot, but that experience was invaluable. So that's a long-winded way of saying I thought I had a really, really good plan for most of my life. I will say when I got into working in PR, I really attacked learning the industry. I ask a lot of questions. You know, I listen a lot so that I can better understand, you know, the job, even if I'm not in it then, and try to be a continuous learner. But then the more important part is every time there was an opportunity, I was very fortunate mostly to have people that really took an interest in me in terms of my development and helping me find better opportunities, and then, you know, hopefully doing a good job to make them proud of, you know, that advice and that recommendation that they gave me.
Network and listen to your friends.
Yes, yes. Listen to your mentors. I mean, I was so lucky that, you know, my first job and my first couple places that I worked, my bosses at the time were very inclusive in terms of bringing us in the room. So when they were making decisions, we understood the thought process, even if as an intern, you weren't the one making that decision, but they wanted you to be ready for when you were doing the same thing. And, you know, that development, I mean, I didn't have any PR experience before my first internship, and to be able to learn it like that is all about the people that I was fortunate enough to work under.
Matt Taylor, thank you for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Yep. Anytime. Okay.